the Five Rings Podcast, Road to Tokyo on the Sport Podcasting Network. Your weekly fix leading up to the 2020 Olympic Games with Dwayne Rollins and Kevin Larame. Follow us and listen to us live on Twitter at Five Rings Podcast and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/Sports Podcasting Network for more content.
Good day, good night, and welcome to the Five Rings Podcast. For Wednesday, September 11th, 2019, I'm Kevin Larame, joined by my co-host of a long time, Dwayne Rollins. How are you doing today, Dwayne?
I'm doing well. We're happy to talk about my favorite topic, the Olympics, on that road to Tokyo.
Road to Tokyo 2020 is going to come fast and quick. But before we get to 2020, there's a few interesting events happening. There's the 2019 Rugby World Cup. And we'll obviously follow the Rugby World Cup because next year, the Rugby 15 will make their debut in the Olympic Games. And that will be a very watchable, TV-friendly sporting competition. And we're going to follow it this fall from September 20th to November 2nd on TSN here in Canada. And you can look at your local listings to see where you can find the Rugby World Cup, but it's we'll talk about this a little bit later on. Dwayne, we'll also touch a little bit on FIBA in the United States being, well, not playing for a medal in the 2019 Federation International of Basketball Association World Cup. That's what FIBA stands for, so the Basketball World Cup. But let's start the show by talking about Olympic bids, Dwayne. Last Tuesday, yesterday, in Australia, Thomas Bach was presented by an early draft of the Australia 2032 Summer Olympic Games bid, and already a lot of praises are sent towards Brisbane and Australia for the 2032 Olympic Games. And there's a potential of a fast track for this bid as well, which is not necessarily that surprising when we look at the LA 2024 bid and the bids of the last few years where they were announced quite early in the process. Not a lot of cities or countries are bidding, and they're trying to save costs by fast-tracking or streamlining the bidding process.
Yeah, and look, this makes a lot of sense from the ISU's perspective because, as you say, and as we talked about a great deal in our archives, the bids, we called the last Winter Games the games no one wanted, right? That was the ones that ended up going to Pyeongchang. So it's really difficult to not only to get countries interested in bidding because they view these games as prohibitively expensive, but it's also really difficult, even when there is an initial interest, to get through a bidding process without massive opposition rising up. And to be cynical a little bit here, I think that fast-tracking these bids, particularly for the Summer Games, which are a massive undertaking, you kind of avoid that step. If you're already sort of given the games, yes, you'll still get opposition, but they don't have the time to mobilize in the same way that they used to. And look, I'm not we had the No Boston Olympics folks on here in the past, so it's not that we won't give equal time to the opposition to it. But at the same time, I think sometimes both sides are guilty of exaggerating the negatives and the positives is what I'm saying. And I think that if you work with the community from the beginning and you avoid an expensive bidding process, then you're maybe going to be able to have a fact-based discussion to make sure that the games are happening in a way that is sustainable and is not profitable, because I don't believe they're really profitable in any true way, but that is that has all those soft benefits. And if you're new to listening to us, we talk about hard benefits and soft benefits. A hard benefit is whether there's a financial windfall from something, whether you get a new stadium, whether you get something that's tangible. A soft benefit is more philosophical. It's whether you inspire a nation, whether you create healthier people, whether you make your nation feel better, all that sort of stuff. And I think that there's, you could argue which is more important, but I think that you have to consider both when you're talking about the value of an Olympics. And too often on the opposition side, they only focus on the hard, well, benefits. They wouldn't call them benefits. The hard
cost
problems that are happening with the games. And they don't talk about any positivity, which does stem from the hosting of these games. So I think this is a long-winded, roundabout way of saying that fast-tracking will allow the IOC and the NOCs to get ahead of the game and to get out there and stress that positive impact that, that the games can have. And it will stop them as well from lying about the hard benefits.
That's true. Of overplaying the positives too. Here's an article. It's on gamesbiz.com, which is one of our favorite websites to get our info on Olympic bids, the process, and one of the only websites. There's Inside the Games, but gamesbiz.com. We received a few journalists in our archives in the other iteration of the show back in the 2014 and 2016, and we're probably going to get in touch with GamesBids soon. So GamesBids, if you're listening, you know where to find us. International Olympic Committee President Thomas Bach warmly welcomed delegates representing the Queensland's Australia's 2032 Olympic and Paralympic Games bid Tuesday, as the yet confirmed bid was soft launched among top officials. Leaders presented what they claimed to be efficient plans that would leverage 85% existing facilities across Southeast Queensland to stage the events. By investing the expected $1.8 billion American, so $2.6 Australian dollars, contribution by the IOC derived from broadcast and sponsorship revenues, it is hoped the games would help deliver necessary transportation upgrades across the region and an 80,000-seat Olympic stadium in state capital Brisbane to complement an existing Olympic village that was built for the Commonwealth Games in Gold Coast last year. Another complex to house Olympic athletes would be developed in Brisbane should the city be chosen to host the games. That's interesting to me, Dwayne, as well, because we're seeing facilities being reused, facilities that were built or upgraded for the Pan Am Games that happened last year, Commonwealth Games, sorry, and you can use the facilities that were built and upgraded and refreshed and put a little bit of paint a coat on it to use them again quickly, at least hopefully quick enough in 2032, that they would not have crumbled and become white elephants at that point. So it is in mind, and looking at other cities that had big events over the last few years, it is good of environmentally speaking, good also for cost controlled purposes to reuse what would be at least hopefully decent facilities still in 2032 when you were considered they were built to be used in 2018.
Yeah, no, I haven't had a chance to look closely at the bid yet as it just came out, but I was about to say before you even mentioned the Commonwealth Games that obviously the Gold Coast Commonwealth Games were held last year and there would have been a lot of facilities built for that. And it makes so much sense to reuse that stuff. And you know, whether you mentioned Pan Am Games, yeah, a little odd for Australia to host a Pan Am Games, not being in North or South America, but there are lots of...
I know, Commonwealth.
Yeah, yes, there are lots of Lima just held one, Toronto, of course, in 2015, to reuse those venues in ways that make them not a one-off, makes that, you know, makes the hard benefit, as I talked about, a little bit more real, right? And I think there has been a movement. I have heard many people mention the possibility of that one way to alleviate the cost prohibitive nature of hosting would be maybe to award for back-to-back games, or, you know, maybe you have a sort of a rotation. So you get it for, say, 32 and 40, right? You'd get it two Olympics later. Hopefully I'll be around for those ones, but we'll see. Anyway,
Dwayne's already contemplating his mortality here on the Five Rings podcast.
I want to talk about 4 years at a time. You start to think that way. Well, anyway, nonetheless, things like that, everything helps. And I don't think the Olympics is ready to make that kind of jump yet, but I think there's a lot of sense to, particularly on the winter side, where there's only so many places that can host winter games effectively. And to avoid situations like we're going to have, you know, next winter games in Beijing, where you have, you know, it's an insane distance between the mountain sports and the arena sports. To avoid that, I think maybe having multiple hosts in the same city would make a lot of sense. You just got to reuse stuff, recycle.
Exactly.
You know, that's all. Yeah, you just got to do it.
Well, this is going to turn into maybe a society conversation like it sometimes does on the Five Rings podcast. But as a whole, we're kind of stemming away as a society from everything always needing to be shining brand new and amazing and great. The 80s, 90s, and 2000s, the great construction booms and economical booms and crashes as well, happened and went away. And we're seeing a change in how the bids themselves and the Olympics are going away from making a spectacle out of the awarding process and making the spectacle the games, trying to cut costs here and there, trying to focus on the games. And of course, we're going to see amazing games in Asia. And the fact that we're seeing the last game in Pyeongchang, the Beijing in 2022, and Tokyo next year, those are not equivalent to what the future of the Olympic movement is going to look like. What it's already been worked on and the Agenda 2020 and the rest of mentality of the last bids process are really going to start with LA. And then 2028, 2032, and 2036 are really the Olympics that will represent going forward sustainability and how to reuse existent facilities, infrastructures, arenas, stadiums. So we're going to see it get worse before we see it gets better, as in wasted resources, especially in Beijing. Trust me, we're going to see a lot of wasted resources in 2030 and 2022. But that's where it's going to look like in 2024 in LA, the Coliseum being reused and other things being reused in a streamlined way. I think it's going to show us for the future of the Olympic movement what can be done in a scaling down a bit and refocusing on the athletes and not everything surrounding the competitions. I think will be healthy for all parties involved heading into the future of what could be the Olympic movement.
Yeah, and not just the Olympic movement either. I think any multi-sport event really should be looking at that model. I mean, you know, I sit in a city in Toronto that hosted the 2015 Pan Ams, as I said before. We're coming on to a centennial of the Commonwealth Games. There's a lot of talk behind the scenes of perhaps bringing those Commonwealth Games back to this region, where, of course, the first ones were held in Hamilton, and it would make a lot of sense to reuse some of the 2015 Pan Am venues for that, give them a new, as we say, paint of coat. That's a little inside joke if you don't know coat of paint. Anyway, you give them a little coat of paint, and away you go, and you have that. That's just one example. I think you should reuse Commonwealth Game venues. You should reuse Pan Am venues, Asian Games venues, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They all have to be leveraged. Otherwise, you are talking about something that the opposition does have legitimate concerns about. These venues often, you know, for instance, if you're hosting a multi-sport game, inevitably there's no part of the world that is equally loves all sports, right? So there are some venues you're creating that will never be used again unless you create them in a self-sustaining way that can be repurposed or reused down the line.
Exactly. Now that Five Rings have made their transition to video, and maybe in the next few weeks, Dwayne, we could take a look at Athens 2004. And we can also look at South Africa 2010, the FIFA World Cup. Because I have images in my computer saved from 2011 that are literally a year after the 2010 South Africa World Cup. And you see the big white elephants of the stadiums becoming already abandoned. Same happened in Rio. Well, same happened for the Brazil World Cup and same happened for the Olympics in Brazil. Same thing happens a lot of time, oftentimes. And I'm not worried for this to happen in Tokyo. I'm not worried for this to happen in Pyeongchang and in Beijing. They'll find ways to reutilize this. There's a limited amount of space and there's a growing population that is the biggest in the world. That won't be a problem. But in the rest of the world, it could be a problem. And that's why we're seeing, too, Dwayne, Euro 2020 next year, the European Championship, which the qualifiers are happening right now in the UEFA in football, soccer. We're seeing the new model or a model being tested. And I think it's going to give us a lot of proof of concept next year when we see the European Championship, how it's handled. And it might give the IOC a bit more thinking behind separating one game in multiple cities.
Yeah, I am a huge advocate of that. That is my solution to how you combat bloating, because look, there's a lot of problems going on here. The cost to host these games is huge because there are so many athletes, so many sports involved. You don't ever want to be the person to cut a sport from these games, and it's never fair when you do, but at the same time you have to keep the cost down. So if you're having these games spread out over multiple cities, then you don't have to do those cuts because multiple cities, multiple countries are handling the cost. And it realistically is a TV production for the most part. Yes, there are people that go to every Olympics. Yes, there are people that attend yes, the host cities benefit from those 2 weeks in the party that they're in. So why not spread that joy a little bit and spread out the risk a little bit more too? That to me, I think the European model next year, they say it's only once it's going to happen. It wouldn't shock me that if it works well next year that they just do that, especially in that sport. I think World Cups make a lot of sense to have 8 different host cities. We're going to see it in 2026 in Canada, USA, and Mexico to a certain extent too, where you have it spread out over multiple countries and multiple cities, right? So
yeah,
it's hard to travel, but...
It's hard to travel, yes and no. It's hard to travel in a way, but compared now to what, 40 years ago, it's a lot easier to travel today. And yeah. my point being is the idea behind the Olympic Games. What's the idea? It's to prove who's the best in the world, right? It's not necessarily to have everything together all at once. It was made that way because it was so hard to travel, especially when the movement started in the late 1800s, early 1900s with Pierre de Coubertin. Took months to get to places by boat, right? That's how people traveled. So you had to make a one-time event for everyone to get there to do things and then on their merry way back home. Now things are a bit different. I'm not saying you couldn't get all the medals all at one time and places, but you could have competitions happening on a home and away series almost at the Olympic level, depending on where in the world, depending on what it is. You could have regional competitions to eventually get yourself to the Olympic qualifying process, depending on the sports. Example, let's just use volleyball. Hello, Gavin, if you're listening. Just use volleyball, do regional qualifying, which is kind of a little bit like already, but including them in the Olympic process, have the 5 rings branded to it, expand the coverage of the Olympic Games to not just necessarily those 2 weeks, but to have leading up finals all the way to the Olympic Games. I think there's something to be done with that name, that branding, that is more than just 2 weeks, and you could use that branding for a few weeks before and trying to include more than what it is inside and trying to rethink of the potential of the games and what are the games about. Is it truly to make something so big that it has a chance of disappearing eventually, or trying to find a way to make it happen and to refocus on the sport? And I think for me, if you add more, not necessarily more sports, but more competitions, example, the regional qualification example. So the North America volleyball tournament would have the 5 rings, the branded of the Olympic Games, because the winner of this or the top 4 of this are qualifying for the Olympic Games. I don't know, trying to build the spectacle around the sports, and that would be a big change from what we've seen in the past.
Yeah, no, absolutely. All that stuff's good, and you know, just spread the love. I'm a big advocate of that, as we say, because you have to do something. Otherwise, the voices against the movement will continue to grow. And I don't think they'll ever completely kill it, but they certainly are making it less and less accessible. And, you know, the only other solution is just accept the idea that the Olympics are only really going to be held in, you know, totalitarian places. Exactly. And that's not good either.
No, we have bad example in the history of the world of what Olympics could look like in the 30s. Exactly. Thank you, Jesse Owens. That's all I have to say. And that's all we probably should say, too.
Yeah. Now, yeah.
Look, avoided that slippery slope, jumped over the sinkhole, and now off to another topic. United States, France, FIBA, World Cup, right now. France beat the United States and pretty much eliminated the United States from medal contention in this weirdly formatted tournament that is a FIBA World Cup. But the World Cup of basketball will not have the United States having a medal for the first time since professional players of the NBA are admitted into the World Cup. And that is quite an upset. And it does give a little bit of indication of how important this World Cup is becoming for American basketball players.
Well, yeah, we talked about this last week when we were talking about, you know, Canada's case where they went 3 and out and basically stunk the joint up based on the fact that a lot of their players skipped it. The U.S. had a similar issue. And the thing is, even when they do show up, the U.S. struggles to get up for these games. And it's a product of, I think, I don't know, it's a product of boredom in a way. They just don't motivate themselves. They're not giving the same level of intensity that they would in an Olympics and certainly in an NBA season, because the money difference and the pride difference just isn't there anymore. And I don't know what the answer is for this, because obviously the tournament matters a lot to outside of North America. It matters a lot, and you don't want to take that away. But at the same time,
it's hard to take it seriously as a major competition, as a World Cup, and to live up to that label when you have Canadian players not even showing up, you have the Americans not taking it as seriously as maybe you'd like to see, and obviously it'd be great for the countries that win it, but I mean, I doubt outside of those countries where the final games are being played, there's going to be much attention to this tournament given 2 weeks after. Everyone's going to be talking about, whether the Clippers can become champions with Kawhi, right? That's going to be the topic in the basketball world.
Well, yeah, that's true, and we'll see if eventually this competition lives to its name. I don't think it will, but it doesn't matter. It is what it is, and some people love it. And but the United States will not win the gold medal, neither a silver nor a bronze. So good job, France, and that's fascinating. But let's move to a World Cup, Dwayne, that does move the needle a bit more. That is more of a proper World Cup. The Rugby World Cup in 2019 in Japan. It's interesting. The FIBA World Cup is in China. The Rugby World Cup is in Japan. You think that's a coincidence? Probably not. Like, all right, you got one World Cup, we'll get the other one. We'll compete with you, of course. But Japan 2019. 20 teams. There's four groups. There's a pool stage, a knockout stage. Pool A, Dwayne, five teams. Ireland, Scotland, Japan, Russia, Samoa. Seems like a tough group. Pool B, New Zealand, South Africa, Italy, Namibia, and Canada in Pool B. Pool C, England, France, Argentina, United States, and Tonga. And Pool D, Australia, Wales, Georgia, Fiji, and Uruguay. This going to be a cracker of a competition.
Yeah, of course, especially when it gets to the final stages. Now, the rugby suffers. In much the same cricket does, and with Commonwealth sports, it makes sense in the sense that it's at the top level, there's disparity between sort of the top 10 and the rest of the world. I've seen this firsthand here in Canada, where I remember watching Rugby World Cups back in the 90s. Canada was not contending by any nature, but they were competitive in them. And now it's just increasingly becoming less and less so. And then that's just the nature of the professionalization of the game elsewhere. But on the other hand, the great thing about this and the great thing about opening rugby up to the Olympic level is it does give some lesser fancied countries in the world an opportunity to shine at that level. We saw it in the Rugby Sevens in the last Olympics, where there was the first island nation to capture a team medal. And maybe we'll see that again too. And that's obviously one area of the world where
it
rugby
was
sport is
Fiji.
very, very popular.
It
Yeah,
was Fiji,
Fiji,
right? If
yeah.
I'm not mistaken, I'm trying to recall that from the top of my head. And by the way, here are the rules. The teams finishing in the top two of each pool advances to the quarterfinals. The top three teams of each pool receives automatic qualification for the 2023 Rugby World Cup. I kind of like that if you perform well enough, you're going to qualify for the next World Cup in the actual present World Cup, which gives you 4 years to get ready for the World Cup. I kind of like that idea.
Yeah, and I suspect that has a lot to do with that very reason, that if you're not necessarily the first or second, but those third place teams are often from countries that aren't traditional powers in it. So they are, and it makes every game in the pool stages matter too, right? So if you get that third place game, you don't have to go through the qualifying process, and you can work your entire program around for the next 4 years to give yourself a chance to continue to grow. And sports like rugby, like cricket, that have a limited appeal outside of the core countries, you need to do things to grow where the game is played and make it not so entirely about those core countries. Are you listening? Hockey, ice hockey. Anyway, that's another topic altogether. It's great we win all the time, but only certain countries care. Anyway. So it's
It's
important
true.
to try and grow the sport, and that seems like an issue that they're doing to do that.
Hey, we win in hockey, period. I was watching field hockey last week on my television. Thank you, beIN Sports, for showing some field hockey live on my telly. But I watched Canada beat New Zealand, I think, in field hockey. That was kind of fun. But no, I digress. But I like that format, because then you have three teams in each pool that are qualifying for the 2023 World Cup. Example, a team on the outside, example, Namibia, or a team like, I would say, Georgia, who are not powers, but they're not necessarily emerging countries too. They're countries that are there to make up the number all the way to 20, but they're growing. They're becoming more powers and using the niche aspect of the type of sport that is rugby for Georgia example. And they can focus on it, invest a certain amount, but only on that sport. They're not investing money all across the board of Olympic sports, right? They're choosing one or two. And then for next year, I wouldn't be surprised if Georgia is in the conversation and wanted to run the competition to be close to a medal. Or if you use the same mentality, Georgia uses the same thinking behind their luge program for the Winter Games. So one of their most invested programs, Olympic programs for the summer, is the rugby team, because they have a feeling that they could not necessarily do damage and battle for a medal, but perform at a higher level than other sports regarding where their resources are to begin with. Like when we think of Georgia, Dwayne, we think about not necessarily rugby, we do think about wrestling and luge, but rugby, it's kind of like an offshoot of wrestling, I guess. the skills are transitional. You can use your takedowns in rugby.
There you go. Well, it's a tackle sport. It's a physical sport that way. I mean, the system you're describing is very similar to the very successful On the Podium program here in Canada, where obviously they give the money to the sports that are most likely to get medals. So, you know, the only issue with it is it's a little self-perpetuating, and it's hard for sports that are outside of that to ever close that gap. They need kind of a freak of nature to happen, really, right? Like someone to emerge from through the dirt to make that sport a contender again. Oh, yeah. I think of Bernard from the biathlon way back when here in Canada.
Well, or if you, the same example for, to a lesser extent, but don't know, doesn't apply, the Frenchman biathlon who wins everything. But no, I know what you mean. Generational talent will thrive to a certain extent no matter where they're from. But if you want to streamline it, and maybe invest in one program more than others, just because what's the point of investing on track and field if you're Georgia? You're not going to beat Usain Bolt. I know I'm 4 years ago saying Usain Bolt. You're not going to beat Andre DeGrasse, okay? So invest in another sport.
Yeah, we'll find out if anyone can beat Andre DeGrasse later on this month when we have the Athletics World Championships at the end of the month. Next month, actually. But yeah, it's a lot of fun times there. No, for sure, it's a smart way to go about it. You know, there's lots of philosophical arguments how to best fund elite sport, and whether the elite sport should get funding over recreational sport. Lots of fun debates you can have there. And certainly it does matter, though, how you fund those sports. We've seen it, as I say, firsthand in the country that we know the best, where Canada used to be a dramatically underperforming Olympic nation. I think that's fair. And I would say that now it's quite the opposite. They are an overperforming nation based on their size. So it's all about how you structure your programs to fund and to work and to train and to develop those athletes and to take the long-term athletic development pathways. You know, LTAD is science, and it works.
Well, it used to be called LTPD, but I'm glad that we changed it, because it's long-term athletes development. And that's where it becomes a fascinating conversation, is thinking of all we talked about in the last 30 minutes, how it applies to development of athletes too, using the white elephants that you could be creating by hosting a game to the development of the said sport in the same country. I'm going to bring the Milton Velodrome back into the conversation. But since 2015, track cycling hasn't been as good in Canada as of right now. And why? Because we have international quality facility that kids and athletes in their development stage can use to get better.
Yeah, and beyond that, we did a lot of five-ring shows in the lead up to TO 2015, and that facility is not only producing elite athletes, it's also just remarkably used in the Milton community as the centerpiece of that community recreationally. They've used the middle of the track for stuff. They use the track, obviously. It's become a hub in the town of Milton, which is a growing community just outside of Toronto, for those that don't know. And it speaks to, what does it speak to, Kevin? A hard and a soft benefit, all wrapped into one.
I think we have to wrap the show on that one, because we're not going to top that segue. On that note, Dwayne mentioned the track and field athletics world championship in October. We'll obviously focus a lot of times on it, and it's the next international events we're going to present you. We'll keep an eye on the Rugby World Cup, a closer eye than we did on the FIBA World Cup, because the FIBA World Cup was exactly, that's the extent of my opinion on the 2019 FIBA World Cup, that little sigh mixed with a silence that happened and lasted not even a second. That's like how important this World Cup is. But the rugby one will be important to us. We'll also keep an eye on the 2019 Track and Field Championship. We'll whet our appetite until the 2020 Tokyo Games. It'll give us a little preview of what to expect in some, well, half of the Olympics next year, Dwayne.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. And then we're into the winter sports season, which is kind of an in-between stage in the Olympic preparation.
It's so weird.
But we'll be doing it. Lots of curling talk. Curling talk coming up. Curling talk with Dwayne.
With Dwayne and Kevin. But on that note, make sure you follow Dwayne at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Larmé, and this show at Five Rings Podcast Live weekly on our Facebook page. Facebook, yes. It's on Facebook, not live, but it's on live here on Twitter at Five Rings Podcast. Thank you for your subscription and discovering us once again. If you are new to the Five Rings Podcast, we're weekly most of the year and daily during the Olympic Games. Sometimes, like during the Track and Field 2019 World Championship, we might have extra coverage and extra shows for you, and probably will be available on patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. This is where you can support us financially, support our efforts to bring you more information, more details, and more coverage of Olympic and amateur sports straight to your devices, straight to your televisions, laptops, and everything you watch the show with. But until next week, as always, for Dwayne Rollins, I'm Kevin Larmé. Own your podium.